Whatever you said earlier about your head being fuzzy is hitting me too, he said, his voice strained. I can't hold them up for much longer. When I let them down, we run for them and fight. Got it? Got it, I repeated. I worried about whatever was affecting our powers, but with the Gorgons ready to kill us, there was nothing we could do about it now. All we could do was fight the best that we could. We held our weapons ready, and the moment Chris dropped his hold on the Gorgons, we ran toward our assigned sister. I looked down at my feet as I ran, unable to see past the visor guarding my eyes. I wanted to flick the visor away. I hated going into this blind, but the risk of meeting Medusa's eyes was too great. I centered in on the red-snaked sister's throat, aimed an arrow over my shoulder with my back facing my target, and sent the arrow flying in her direction. It missed her throat, embedding itself in the wall. I gasped, shocked that I'd missed. In practice, I'd mastered shooting arrows over my shoulder. Blake must have been surprised too, because he paused while running for the Gorgon, but only for a second. She hissed and reached for his sword, but he sliced her in half before she had a chance. Kill her, quickly, Blake told me, before she regenerates. I focused on gathering black energy, but it felt far away, distant. Whatever was going on with me wasn't just affecting my aim, but apparently my ability to channel my power, too. If my original thought was correct, and it was gray energy, then I should be able to use white energy to push it out of my system, like I'd done when Danielle had put gray energy into my tennis racket during tryouts. I tried to call on the white energy, but just like the black energy, it was barely there. I was blocked from fully reaching it. There was only one explanation. If this was gray energy, then whoever had used it on me was strong, either as strong as I was or stronger. The bottom half of the sister's body skittered towards her top half, but Blake cut it again and set both pieces ablaze. The Gorgon lay helplessly on the floor, and she screamed as if she could feel the unattached part of her body burning. Kill her now, Blake said. What are you waiting for? My head. It's fuzzy, I explained, rubbing my temples. I can't focus. You have to fight through it. He flicked on his lighter and threw a fireball at the Gorgon's face, but it fizzled out before reaching her. He flexed his hand. Had he not let the fire go out on purpose? And shoved his lighter into his pocket. I would do this for you if I could, but I can't. You're the only one who can use black energy. In the mirror, I saw the Gorgon's bottom half weld with her top half again. All of the fire around her was out. Her skin healed. Before she could stand, Blake swung his sword at her and chopped her in half again. I heard the sounds of the others fighting. I had no idea what was going on with them, and I couldn't risk taking my eyes away from our Gorgon to check. But I knew one thing. We couldn't hold the three of them off forever. I needed to kill her. Otherwise, we would have no choice but to run. If we left without Medusa's head, we wouldn't be able to stop Typhon, and this would all have been for nothing. Okay. I took a deep breath, trying to focus. I'll try. I reached for the black energy again, and even though it fought me, I managed to grasp some of it and absorb it into my palms. The smoky tendrils hovered below the surface of my skin, threatening to escape at any moment. I couldn't hold on to it much longer, so I dove toward the Gorgon, placed my hand on her chest, and shoved the small amount of black energy into her body, hoping it would be enough. She let out a long breath, and then she was still. I looked down at her past my mirror. Her eyes stared blankly up at the ceiling. Dead. She's dead, Blake confirmed. He leaned forward, balancing his hands on his legs and taking a few deep breaths. Are you okay? I asked, reaching for his hand. Just dizzy, he said, and then he straightened, steadying his breathing. It's nothing. It'll pass. Whatever's affecting Chris and me is affecting you too, isn't it? If it is, there's nothing we can do about it, he said, holding his sword up higher. Other than finish this fight as fast as we can, and as much as I want to stick together, it'll be best if we split up, to add numbers to both of the other groups. I don't want to split up either, I said, but you're right, it makes the most sense. Of course I'm right. He smirked, and if I hadn't seen him falter earlier, I would have had no idea he was affected by the gray energy, too. You go take care of the other sister. You're the only one who can kill her. I'll help Danielle and Ethan with Medusa.
Chapter 40. I zeroed in on Chris and Kate, who were engaged in a sword fight with the other Gorgon sister. They'd cornered her into the wall, which was good, because at some point during the fight, the Gorgon must have ripped the mirror visor off of Chris's hat. He couldn't risk turning around now, since there was a chance he might accidentally meet Medusa's eyes. They were fighting hard, but the Gorgon was strong. And it was clear from the way Chris and Kate were sweating and breathing heavily that they couldn't hold her off for much longer. Hoping to help them out from afar, I positioned my bow, aimed for the Gorgon's throat, and fired over my shoulder. But instead of hitting my target, the arrow sunk into the wall behind her.
Nicole!
Kate shouted my name over the clashing of swords.
Thank God, we need you.
The Gorgon took a swing at her, but Chris moved fast and blocked her sword.
Why aren't you using your powers? I asked them.
We can't.
Kate gasped for breath and pushed a sweaty strand of hair that had escaped her ponytail away from her face.
Gray energy.
That was all she could manage before the Gorgon swung at her again. But it was all I needed to know. Their powers were blocked just like Blake's and mine. I didn't know if Danielle and Ethan were affected too, but at this rate, I would say there was a good chance. Hopefully, I could manage to hold on to enough black energy to kill this Gorgon. But other than that, we were going to have to fight her the old-fashioned way, without our powers. I steadied my bow, determined not to miss again. The room spun around me, and I took a few deep breaths, trying to relax. I needed to focus. I didn't have another choice. This time, I would aim for the Gorgon's eye. It wouldn't kill her. Only black energy could do that. But it might blind her, if only temporarily, which would give Kate or Chris a chance to knock her sword out of her hand. I wished more than anything that I could rip this visor off my eyes and shoot normally, but it wasn't worth the risk. I wouldn't be any use to anyone if I were turned into stone. After taking extra time to zero in on my target, I shot the arrow over my back. But instead of embedding itself in the Gorgon's eye, it sunk straight into Chris's shoulder. He screamed, his sword falling out of his hand. The Gorgon sister he was fighting, Euryale, grabbed him and held him in front of her, raising her sword to his neck. I froze and took a sharp breath inward. How had I messed up that badly? How had I shot Chris? I wanted to take another shot at the Gorgon. If I could get her in her sword arm, maybe she would release Chris. But my aim was too off to risk it. So I gathered the small amount of black energy that I could and ran for her. Before reaching her, I turned around to get a view of her in the mirror so I didn't accidentally touch Chris instead of Euryale. But turning made the world spin around me, and the Gorgon took advantage of my slight pause by kicking me in the chest, knocking the breath out of my lungs and sending me flying into the wall. Pain racked through my body at the impact, blinding light flashing across my eyes. The next thing I knew, I was on the ground. The mirror in my visor had cracked, but it still worked, so I angled it to see the Gorgon. She still held on to Chris, her sword at his throat. Kate froze, her face pale, as if she was afraid that one wrong move would make the Gorgon slash that sword across Chris's neck. I tried to stand, but only managed to lift myself up an inch before collapsing back to the floor. My lungs felt like they'd been crushed. I had to strain to breathe, and even then, it was barely enough air. I searched for white energy to heal myself, but my mind was so clouded that I could barely sense it around me. It was like digging through quicksand.
Oh, Medusa!
Eurylee called her sister's name in a chilling, sing-song voice.
Look over here for a second. I have a prize for your collection.
Medusa whipped her head around to look at Chris, effortlessly using her sword to protect herself against the others. They were coming at her, their shields guarding their backs, but Medusa had a clear advantage, since she was able to look at her opponents when she fought them.
Open his eyes, you idiot! Medusa screeched. I can't do anything with his eyes closed.
She easily fended off a blow from Danielle, pushing her to the wall. Danielle collided with one of the statues and collapsed. Ethan and Blake were fading too, their movements slower, their breathing labored. The gray energy was weakening us too much. At this rate, it wouldn't be long until the Gorgon slaughtered us. Chris fought against Eurylee's grip, but weakened with gray energy, struggling was futile. The Gorgon felt around his eye, trying to pry it open.
No!
Kate ran toward Eurylee, sword in hand, stopping in front of Chris to block his line of sight. She turned to get a view of Eurylee in the mirror, but before she could strike, Eurylee removed her hand from Chris's face and ripped Kate's visor off her hat. Kate's eyes were wide open, and without the visor protecting her, she was staring straight into the gaze of Medusa. Chapter 41. Kate screamed, the loudest, most tormented scream I'd ever heard, her face twisting in agony. Then there was nothing. No sound, nothing. Just a stone statue of Kate, frozen in her final, tortured moment. Before I could process what had happened, blood splashed onto the statue, and Chris collapsed at Kate's stone feet, gripping his throat with his hands. His eyes were wide in panic, and he took gasping, gurgling breaths, blood gushing from his neck and collecting in a pool around him. How was this happening? Kate was dead. Chris was dying. And here I was, pathetic and suffocating in my own body, blocked from accessing my powers. No! I screamed, refusing to let it end like this. We weren't supposed to lose this fight. We were supposed to win. Nyx had said it was possible. She said we had the strength to succeed. We just had to look within ourselves to make it happen. The gray energy had polluted my mind tonight, making me lose sight of my strength. But I had to fight it. I owed it to myself, to the others, to my family, and to the world. Please, Nyx. I pictured her serene face as I gazed up at the ceiling, which was covered in twinkling lights resembling the stars. Give us the strength to get through this. With that final thought, I closed my eyes and forced through the gray energy barrier, collecting enough white energy to heal myself on the spot. I bolted forward, gathering white energy in one hand and black in the other, falling to the floor and placing one hand on Chris, reaching the other one up to the Gorgon's stomach. The Gorgon thumped to the floor, dead. Chris's breathing turned normal, and he dropped his hands from his throat, catching his breath. His eyes remained closed, from fear of seeing Medusa, or seeing what had become of Kate. I didn't know. Next, I reached for Kate, wrapping my hands around her cold stone ankles and gathering as much white energy as I could. This had to work. It had to. Kate couldn't be dead. This was just an injury. A terrible, awful injury. She could be healed from this. I had to believe she could be healed from this. But as hard as I tried, nothing happened. I should have known it wouldn't. Kate, or the statue that used to be Kate, emitted no aura of life. Her spirit wasn't there anymore. At least, not anywhere I could reach. The white energy had nowhere to go, and the statue remained as solid as ever. I watched as blood dripped down the stone and onto the floor. Chris's blood, which had spurted all over Kate after Urieli had sliced his throat. How had this night ended up such a mess? I reached for my necklace, holding the sun pendant between my fingers. If there was ever a time that I needed Apollo, it was now. But of course, he didn't come.
"Is it working?"
Chris asked, his voice so low and raspy I could barely hear him.
"Can you heal her?"
I just stayed there, frozen, staring at my hand wrapped around Kate's stone leg. Tears streamed down my face, and I couldn't bring myself to say it. I'd already been through this once with Rachel, when I told Ethan I couldn't save her. How was I supposed to say it again now? About Kate. I couldn't, because if I said it, then it would be true, and I wasn't ready for it to be true. Maybe if I just tried harder. I closed my eyes, focusing on the white energy around me, gathering more and more of it until it wasn't possible to hold it in my body for a second longer. Once there was no more containing it, I released it, trying to force it to flow into Kate's stone body. I thought of Nyx again, picturing her face in my mind, since that had helped me break past the barrier before. Maybe she would help again now. But it didn't work. The energy wouldn't absorb into the stone, no matter how hard I tried. Instead, it released back into the universe, unchanged. Before I could admit defeat, someone else screamed nearby. Danielle. I stared down at the floor, unable to move, unable to think. If Danielle had been turned to stone too, I couldn't bring myself to look. There was another thump, and then all was silent. Chapter 42.
"Make sure her eyes are shut," someone said.
"Blake,
look at her in the mirror to close her eyes."
"I know," Danielle snapped. She was talking. She wasn't dead.
"It was drilled into my mind enough in practice."
She rummaged around for a few seconds, but I didn't look up to see what was going on. My gaze was stuck on Kate's stone feet. I refused to look up at Kate, refused to see her face. It would make this too real. I wasn't ready to give up hope that I could save her. Maybe if I could figure out a way to gather more energy.
"We can take our visors off now,"
Blake said, his voice devoid of emotion.
"Danielle has Medusa's head."
I pulled the hat off my head and tossed it to the floor. I blinked a few times, adjusting to being able to see normally again, and stared at Danielle, who was holding Medusa's head in one hand, the golden sword dangling to the ground from the other.
"When?"
I somehow managed to say.
"How?"
I tasted salt on my lips, tears. The salty streams had dried and cracked over my cheeks, too.
"Medusa let her guard down for a second to admire."
Danielle paused, her voice catching in her throat. She didn't need to say it for me to understand what she meant. Medusa had let her guard down to admire how she'd turned Kate to stone.
"That second was all I needed," Danielle continued. "She didn't realize I'd gotten up until the sword was slicing through her neck."
I nodded, so dazed that I could barely process what had happened. I didn't even care that we'd gotten Medusa's head. All I wanted was to heal Kate. She might not have been the strongest of the five of us, but she was the smartest, the kindest. No one deserved to die, but Kate deserved it least of all. When I was younger, I believed that everything happened for a reason.
I still believed that everything happened for a reason. But there was no reason for this to be the end for Kate, which meant it couldn't be the end. The only reason I could possibly think of was that I was supposed to push myself to a new level with my power, that I was supposed to save her. The world spun around me again, probably because I'd already used so much energy trying to heal Kate. But I didn't care. I still had some juice left in me, which meant I could still do this. I forced myself up and walked around to look at Kate from the front. Her mouth was open, mid-scream, her face twisted with the agony of her final moment. She still held her sword. The sword had been turned to stone, too. Her other hand reached forward, her fingers curled in front of her, as if trying to protect herself from Medusa's gaze. Someone came up behind me and reached for my hand. Blake. His cheek was bruised, as if someone had whacked him in the face, and blood dripped from a cut above his forehead. I wanted to reach forward and heal his injuries, but his injuries were minor. I could heal him later. My energy had to be reserved for Kate. "Earlier tonight, you wanted to try healing that statue," he said, his jaw set in determination. "The man we were looking at, when security told you not to touch him. You said there was a chance it could work. Have you tried that yet, with Kate?"
"Yes." My voice cracked when I said it. "It didn't work. But maybe if I tried harder, if I had your help, if I had everyone's help, I could do it."
"What do you mean?"
Danielle limped over, cradling her arm and barely putting any weight on her left foot. Those injuries must have happened before, or when, Medusa threw her into the statue, which made it even more impressive that she'd ran at Medusa and sliced off her head when she did. "Back in the cave, with the harpy, I started. I barely had any energy left after healing myself from the fall down the cliff. But Kate needed me then, so you all lent me your energy so I could heal her. What if we tried the same thing again now?"
"It's dangerous," Blake said, placing his hand on my shoulder. "You can't take any of our energy for yourself. But you handled it then, so I know you can handle it now."
Chris got up from the floor, stepping in the puddle of his own blood as he made his way toward me.
"You know I'm in," he said, placing his hand on my other shoulder. "Kate risked herself to save my life. I'll do anything to save her now."
"I'm in too,"
Danielle said, placing her hand on my arm. "Ethan?" I asked, turning to look at him. Like the others, he was bruised and cut up, but nothing life-threatening. He would be able to help if he wanted to.
"All you have to do is place your palm on Nicole and open your energy to her," Blake explained. "Give what you can and stop when it feels like too much."
"It's not dangerous?"
Ethan asked.
"No,"
Blake said.
"Not for us. Only for Nicole. Because witches aren't meant to directly take the energy of other witches. Doing so would stop her body from producing its own energy again and make her reliant upon the energy of others forever. But she was able to do it once. You don't have to explain anymore."
Ethan stepped forward, resting his hand on my other arm.
"If doing this can save Kate, then of course I'm in."
"Thank you." I nodded at him, finding a new respect for him now that I felt like he was truly a part of our team. He nodded back, and then I turned back around to face Kate. I reached for her hand, the one that hadn't been holding the sword, and wrapped mine around it. Without access to her sword hand, I placed my other hand on her heart. Then I closed my eyes and reached out, feeling the white energy that I'd gathered before. I pulled it toward me, but then reached even farther, pushing past the limits of the building around us and up to what felt like the sky itself, using the energy from the others to gather more white energy than I'd ever gathered before.
This time, I didn't just fill my own body with it. I imagined the energy filling their bodies too, collecting inside all five of us, connecting to me where their palms touched my skin. I gathered more and more and more, until the orbs of white energy glowed with so much heat that they warmed the room itself. I gathered the energy until I felt like I might explode from the sheer force of it. And then I released it all into Kate. I still couldn't feel her spirit under my touch, but I didn't care. I forced the energy toward her anyway. If I believed this would work, then it had to work. I wouldn't accept anything else. I pushed as much of the energy as I could out of my body, feeling colder and colder as it left my system. And then, when only a tiny bit was left, everything went dark. Chapter 43. I woke up in a bed, although I didn't know whose bed it was. It was too big to be mine. I rolled over, not opening my eyes yet, because I'd just been having a wonderful dream. I didn't remember much about it, except that I was at the beach with my family, and Blake was there. Apollo was there too. I knew him in the dream, and it wasn't that we'd just met. I'd known him for a long time. I didn't want the dream to be over. What would I be returning to? Burrowing deeper into the covers, I recalled everything that had happened recently. The fight with Medusa and her sisters. Being poisoned by gray energy. Kate turning to stone. And then trying to heal her. What happened after I tried to heal her? I tried to remember, but everything after that was blank. Nicole? Someone asked. Danielle. Are you up? Yeah, I said, although it came out all scratchy, as if I hadn't had any water in days. I opened my eyes and saw a slanted wooden roof above. Danielle sat in an armchair across the room, a book open in her lap. Where am I? I asked her. Darius's guest room. She reached for her phone, typed on it for a few seconds, and sent what I guessed was a text message. We've all been switching off watching you so you wouldn't be alone when you woke up. There's water on the nightstand, if you want it. She motioned to the nightstand, where there was indeed a glass of water. She made no move to get up herself. I remembered a time a few weeks ago when I'd felt just like this and had woken up in an unfamiliar bed with no memory of how I'd gotten there. That time, Kate was in the room with me. She'd handed me the glass of water herself, and when I'd gulped it down in seconds, she hurried to get me more. Kate, I said her name, reaching for the water and guzzling it down. Where is she? Is she okay? Was I able to heal her? Danielle refused to meet my eyes. I shouldn't say anything until the others are here, she said. Just tell me. I already felt much stronger than I had when first waking up, thanks to the water. Is Kate okay or not? No. Danielle shook her head, her chin trembling. You tried. We all helped you try. But it didn't work. I'm sorry. My heart dropped. How had it not worked? I really, truly believed I would be able to save her. I thought I had saved her. I'd harnessed more energy than I ever had before, more energy than I thought was physically possible. It had to have worked. Because if I couldn't heal her, how were we supposed to get Kate back? Where is she? I sat up, finishing the rest of the water. It must have been infused with orange energy, because I could already feel the added strength rushing through my veins. You didn't leave her there, in that place, did you?
Of course not.
Danielle curled her lip, clearly as disgusted at that idea as I was. Then where is she? I asked again. What happened after I tried to heal her?
The others will be here soon, Danielle said, checking her watch. 10 minutes at the most. I think it's best you wait for them to hear any more.
Chapter 44. I stopped in the bathroom to freshen up, and when I went downstairs to the living room, everyone was waiting, including Hypatia and Jason.
You.
I stopped in my tracks, glaring at Jason.
You put great energy in our drinks during the party. If it wasn't for you, then Kate wouldn't be...
I promise you, I didn't put great energy in your drinks, he said calmly. But if you take a seat, we'll tell you our theory about who did.
I stayed where I was, because if Jason didn't put the great energy in our drinks, then who did? Surely not Hypatia, not after everything she's been through with us in Greece. The only other people I'd accepted drinks from were Blake and Ethan. And it couldn't have been either of them, because they were affected by the gray energy too. Blake walked to where I was standing, taking my hand in his.
I promise we can trust him, he said.
And he sounded so convinced that I had no choice but to believe him.
Come sit down and hear him out, okay?
Fine, I said, following him to the sofa and sitting down next to him. I kept my hand in his, not wanting to let go. After what happened to Kate, he was the only anchor I had to keep me going. How are you healed? I asked, noticing for the first time that all of his injuries were gone. The others were healed too.
It happened when you were trying to heal Kate, Blake said. The white energy didn't work on her, and since we were all holding on to you, we were healed instead.
I can't believe it didn't work on her. I shook my head and looked down at the floor, the reality of it all still not completely sunk in. I put everything I had into healing her. I've never gathered that much white energy before, ever. I thought for sure. My throat choked up, and I had to swallow to compose myself. I thought, for sure, that it would work.
We know you tried,
Chris said. And when I looked at him, I noticed that the usual light in his eyes was gone.
I don't blame you for not being able to heal her. None of us do. What Kate did, she did it to save me. I'm the one who should be dead right now, not her.
No, Hypatia said.
Don't say that. What Kate did was her choice. She wouldn't want you to wish it had happened to you instead.
We'll never know what she would have wanted me to feel, would we have?
Chris asked, his voice sharp.
Because she's gone. Forever.
We all looked down, the finality of his words echoing through the room. I don't remember anything after trying to heal her. I finally broke the silence. What happened afterward? Danielle told me that we didn't leave Kate there.
Ethan called us and told us to come back inside, Hypatia said. He wouldn't tell us what happened, only that you all had Medusa's head. We came in, saw what happened to Kate, and were filled in on the details of the fight. We heard about the gray energy, and you can only assume that it was put into your drinks during the party.
By who? I asked. You and Jason were the only ones who got us drinks.
Medusa knew that the group of you were going to be there because of the information given to her by the primordial sea gods, her parents,
Jason said.
We can only assume that she took extra precaution by hiring a bartender who was a witch, maybe multiple bartenders, and instructing them to put gray energy in your drinks.
Wouldn't he, or she,
Had to have been a strong witch? I asked. To be able to affect demigods?
Yes.
Darius nodded.
The most likely scenario is that Medusa recruited a demigod for the job. It turns out that there are more demigods out there than we ever realized.
How's that possible? I asked. Wouldn't we notice if tons of demigods were running around using their powers?
As you know, the gods come down in disguise and have affairs that can result in children,
he said. And I nodded, since the gods were notorious for their affairs.
Since we've mainly lived in a time of peace, the gods usually blocked the powers of their demigod children so that they can live normal lives. But at the start of the new year, those powers started to unlock. And on the night of the Olympian Comet, that block went away completely, and all of their powers became active again.
But what about Ethan? I asked, turning to him. You knew you were a demigod. You and your sister had even met your father before. He gave you the pendant.
He gave it to us on the land of the Lotus Eaters.
Ethan reached for his pendant, as if he needed reminding that it was still there.
That was where we first met him. But because of the lotus fruit, I don't remember any more than that. Before I was stuck on that island, Rachel and I had never met him. And we had no idea that we were demigods. We had no sense of time on the land of the Lotus Eaters, but we probably came into our powers on the night of the comet, just like the others.
Most of these demigods are confused, Hypatia said. They don't know what they are or why they have their abilities. Our only guess is that Medusa managed to find a demigod and convinced them to work for her.
How would she have found a demigod? I asked. Can she sense us?
From what the others have told us, she was able to smell it in your blood, Hypatia said. Which is a definite concern, especially if other monsters can do the same.
It certainly is,
Darius agreed.
But despite everything, we can't lose sight of your mission. Now that you have Medusa's head, you'll be able to use it to turn Typhon to stone. And then we can figure out how to seal the portal to Kerberos. Once you succeed, it'll be up to us to find these rogue demigods. We'll have to let them know who and what they are so that they understand what's going on and can learn how to protect themselves.
Okay. I ran my fingers through my hair, my head spinning with all this new information. But what about Kate? If she isn't where we left her in the gallery, then where is she?
She's in the training room in the basement,
Darius answered.
Hypatia created the portal back here from L.A., and both you and Kate were carried through.
So you think there's a chance we can get her back? I sat straighter, hope filling my chest. You wouldn't have brought her back if you thought there was no chance, right?
We honestly don't know, Hypatia said gently. I've never heard of any of Medusa's creations returning to what they once were. But I'd also never heard of witches being able to control the elements. So we couldn't leave her there. Just in case there's any chance to reverse her condition.
I did everything I could. I studied my hands, remembering the buzz of all that white energy running through my body. I don't know what else I could have done. And I don't want to give up on her. I can't give up on her.
Good,
Darius said.
Because we're not giving up on her either. We're going to do what I believe Kate would suggest if she were here. We're going to ask the book and find out if there's a way we can save her.
Chapter 45. I situated myself in front of the book, hopeful that this would work.
Whenever you're ready,
Darius said. I took a deep breath, ready, but
but scared at the same time. Because if this failed, then that was it. There would be nothing else we could do. But I couldn't stall any longer. Everyone was staring at me, and it wasn't fair to make them wait. Is there any way to reverse the effect of Medusa's power? I asked, both of my palms placed on the cover of the book. My voice wavered, but I swallowed down the tears, because crying meant admitting that Kate was gone. It meant giving up hope that we could save her, and I refused to give up yet. My palms tingled, which meant one thing. The book was answering my question.
Well? Chris asked, tapping the pads of his fingers together. Is anything happening?
I think so. I pulled my hand off the book, staring at the ancient leather cover. Everyone looked at me to continue, so I opened it, leafing through the pages to find the chapter about Medusa. Just as I'd suspected, more text had been added since we'd seen it last. I scanned through it, my heart dropping when I read the additional lines. The effect of Medusa is irreversible. No creature turned to stone by Medusa can return to their original form. I pushed the book to Chris, unable to bring myself to say it out loud. He stared at it for a few seconds, as if trying to force it to change with sheer willpower.
No.
He used his power to fling the book across the coffee table, letting it fall to the floor.
The book's wrong. It has to be wrong.
Danielle picked the book up and opened it back to the chapter about Medusa. She read it, her lips pressed in a flat line, and then passed the book around so everyone else could see it for themselves. Darius was the last one to read it, and once finished, he closed the book and placed it back on the coffee table.
Well,
he said, laying his glasses down on the cover.
I suppose that's our answer then.
No. I shook my head, refusing to believe it. She can't be. I was about to say, dead, but a flood of tears came out instead. They didn't stop, so I buried my head in my hands, not wanting anyone to see me cry. Once I got control of myself, I sniffed a few times, raised my head, and wiped the tears from my cheeks. The book's only one source, I said. Yes, it's been right about most everything so far. But what if this time it's wrong? What if we can still save her?
I don't want to discount the possibility,
Darius said.
And I promise that I'll look into this further. I'll search through the entire New Alexandrian Library, if that's what it takes. Kate was a student of mine for over a year. She was one of the smartest, most promising students I've ever taught. If there's a way to bring her back, I'll do my best to find it.
Thank you. I sniffed again, wiping my nose with the end of my sleeve.
I'll go with you to New Alexandria, Danielle offered. If that's okay with you.
Yes,
Darius nodded.
I would appreciate your help very much. After you close the portal to Kerberos, of course.
Of course, Danielle agreed.
I hate to ruin this moment, but as the head elder who's been in charge of this mission, I'm afraid that I must.
Hypatia broke in.
I know that Kate was a core part of your group, and that moving on without her will be difficult. Once this mission is complete, you will have ample time to grieve.
She's not dead, Chris said, glaring at Hypatia. You heard Darius. He's going to find a way to fix this.
Yes, Hypatia said. If there's a way to fix this, he will find it. But that will take time. Weeks, months, or even years. And we're facing war right now. If the portal isn't sealed, and the Titans escape, there will be far more casualties than this.
She paused,
looking around at each of us. In the time that I knew Kate, I knew this about her. She wouldn't want what has happened to her to stop you from completing your mission. She would want you to do everything you can to stop this war.
Can we even do this without her? I asked, sitting back in the couch. We were given our powers so the five of us could fight together. Will we be able to succeed with her gone?
Who knows? Chris shrugged. But I do know this. We won't succeed if we don't try. And if we don't try, and the Titans return, then we won't ever have a chance to figure out how to bring back Kate. I'm glad we all agree,
Darius said, sitting straighter.
Because while you've all been in LA, another monster has slipped through the portal.
Another one? I gasped. Why didn't you say something sooner? We could have already killed it.
I glanced around at the others, but none of them looked surprised, so I crossed my arms and sat back, eyeing them suspiciously.
Why do I get the feeling that you all knew about this already?
You've been asleep for over a day, Danielle said.
A day? I repeated, and Darius nodded in confirmation. I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised. I'd used a lot of energy at the gallery. Of course I needed time to recharge. But still, I had no idea it had been so long.
That means we have less than a week until the spring equinox.
6 days, to be exact,
Blake said.
And this monster, a cyclops, has been contained to the general area around the portal. So while you were sleeping, we decided that this is a perfect opportunity to test out Medusa's head. I was the one who convinced them to wait for you.
Thanks, I said, since he was right. I would have hated to miss out on that. But if it works, and I can't imagine why it won't work, we'll have a statue of the Cyclops left over.
What should we do with it?
We can't exactly leave it out in the open.
We're already one step ahead of you,
Ethan said, smiling smugly.
The first thing we'll do is lure the Cyclops into the cave. We'll use the heat on him in there, and then poof, the Cyclops will turn to stone. And he'll serve as a warning for any other creature that escapes from Kerberos.
Chapter 46. We parked at the Hemlock Center and crept out of the van, each with our favorite weapon hidden under our clothes. Ethan also carried a backpack, with Medusa's head zipped inside. Luckily, the snakes on her head had died after we beheaded her. To turn someone to stone, all we had to do was open her eyes. Theoretically, of course, since we had yet to test it out. Sure, we could have tested it on a rat or a guinea pig or something, but it was going to be much more rewarding to test it out on a monster itself. We walked around to the back of the playground, so the Cyclops couldn't see us approach. Like Darius had said, it waited there for us, calmly. Or at least, I thought that was the Cyclops. Because from behind, all I could see was what looked like a young boy. He sat on a swing, surrounded by bags of fast food. Taco Bell, McDonald's, KFC. You name it, and it was there. That was how the witches were keeping the Cyclops in one place. As long as they continuously fed it and promised to return with more food, it didn't attack and was staying on the playground. But they couldn't keep giving it bags of fast food forever, which was why it was time for us to get involved.
Are you sure that's the monster?
I whispered, peering out at the small figure. It sat on the swing, holding tightly onto the chains. It wasn't swinging. It was just sitting there, digging its toes into the ground.
It looks more like a fifth grade boy.
That's because you're looking at it from behind,
Blake said.
From the front, it'll be obvious that it's a monster. You'll see.
You've seen it already? I asked.
I came here once, he said. I was curious about what it looked like. I delivered it some Taco Bell.
Let me guess, I said. A crunch wrap, no sour cream, with the extra nacho cheese?
4 crunch wraps, 3 tacos, and a burrito, he said.
And I widened my eyes, since there was no way that small creature could eat so much.
Don't be deceived. That's one hungry cyclops. And once it gets older, fast food isn't going to cut it anymore. Because grown cyclopses eat.
Will you guys shut up? Danielle somehow managed to sound like she was screaming, even though she was whispering like the rest of us. What do they eat? I asked, ignoring Danielle and focusing on Blake.
Humans.
Ethan jumped in before Blake had a chance to answer.
Which is why we need to turn that one over there to stone before it grows up and realizes that crunch wraps aren't the most delicious item on the menu.
Right, I said. Makes sense. At that moment, the Cyclops shifted in the swing and looked around the playground.
Hello?
It asked, its voice soft and unsure.
Is someone there?
It rotated around completely. And when it turned to face us, I sucked in a sharp breath, raising a hand to my mouth. One single eye stared out at us, taking up a huge chunk of the creature's forehead. The eye was twice the size of a human eye and much rounder, so it appeared almost cartoonish. It was right above his nose, which was pushed in and turned up, probably to make room for the eye. I shouldn't have been shocked. Obviously, I knew that cyclopses only had one eye. But he looked so human from behind. I'd nearly forgotten that he was a monster until he turned around. The cyclops blinked a few times, but other than that, his expression was unchanged.
Hi,
he said, and his voice wavered, as if he was scared.
Are you here to bring me food?
Yes.
Ethan stood up and walked toward the cyclops.
I have it in my bag.
I stayed behind him, not wanting to get too close to the cyclops. The boy didn't scare me exactly. After all, he was only a child. But looking at that round, single eye made me feel uneasy. All the monsters I'd ever seen were adults. This one was so young. I knew Ethan said that adult cyclopses ate humans, but it was hard to imagine this boy, who was still holding tightly onto the chains of the swing and blinking at us nervously, hurting anyone.
Yay!
The cyclops smiled, which looked rather creepy, given his single eye.
What do you have for me today? More of those tacos? I really liked those.
Ethan paused, not meeting the cyclops' eye, and pulled at the straps of his bag. Was he having the same hesitations as I was? Danielle must have also thought he was having doubts, because she stepped to the front of the group.
Yes, we did, she cut in. But this time, we brought enough for all of us. We were thinking that we could have a picnic in the cave. It'll be an adventure. Would you like that?
I'd never pegged Danielle as someone who would be good with kids, but the Cyclops smiled, his eye lighting up.
Yes, he said. That does sound fun, but we're just going in the cave, right? Not into that dark place.
His lower lip quivered, his body starting to tremble.
Because I don't want to go back there. Never, ever, ever.
He glanced behind him, looking over one shoulder, and then the other. His breaths were coming faster, and he looked like a trapped bird, searching for an escape. Before he had a chance to run, droplets started to fall from overhead. Rain. But they were only falling on top of us. Everywhere else was still dry.
We won't send you back to Kerberos, Danielle said. We promise. We just want to go to the cave to get out of the rain. After all, it's not fun to picnic when we're getting rained on, right?
I guess so, the Cyclops said.
And with that, we all walked to the portal that led to the underground cave. Chapter 47.
The first time we were in the cave, back when we were following the clues to find the Book of Shadows, I'd assumed it was directly below town. But back then, I'd never traveled through a portal before. Now, I'd taken portals to Greece, Antarctica, and LA. None of those portals had felt any different from the others. And since both of the entrances to the cave were through portals, I supposed the actual cave didn't have to be in Kinsley. It could be anywhere. The inside of the cave looked the same as it had the first time we were there. Two portals swirled on the walls. The one we'd taken to get there from the playground had the normal smokescreen appearance, like all the other portals I'd ever taken. The opposite portal, however, had a murky, muddy appearance. The hairs on my arm rose just from looking at it. But while the portals were hugely different, they both cast an eerie glow that provided us enough light to see in the cave. As planned, Blake and Ethan stood in front of the portal to Kerberos, to guard it in case any monsters decided that now would be a good time for them to escape. Chris, Danielle, and I stood in front of the portal to the playground, so the Cyclops couldn't try to make a run for it.
What are you all standing around for?
The Cyclops' stomach rumbled, and he wrapped his arms around it, ducking his head as if embarrassed.
I'm hungry. Can we eat now?
His lower lip stuck out as he looked at the backpack, making him look like a starving puppy. At that moment, something within me broke. I couldn't take this anymore. Sure, the Cyclops might grow up to be a monster, but he wasn't a monster yet. Why should we punish him for something he may or may not become? Maybe we shouldn't do this, I said to the others. Can't we wait for another creature to slip through the portal? One that's more deserving of this?
No. Chris didn't hesitate for a second. We have no idea when another one will escape, and every second that passes is another second closer to the spring equinox. We have to do this now, for Kate.
I pressed my lips together, since I couldn't say no to that. But as I looked at the Cyclops, who was still looking around at all of us, clueless about what was going on, I wondered if there was another way.
This needs to be a group decision, Blake said. But Nicole, what other choice do we have?
Everyone looked at me for an answer, but I stayed silent, studying the Cyclops. Could we send him back to Kerberos? But he'd been so terrified when we'd mentioned Kerberos that I couldn't imagine sending him back there. After all, he was so young right now. He couldn't have been alive during the Second Rebellion. He was just unlucky enough to have been born in the prison world, and therefore be a prisoner by default. It didn't seem fair to send him back there for a crime he didn't commit. But he also couldn't live among humans. He could never blend in with them. And there was also the bigger issue, that he would eventually want to eat them. Maybe there was another solution. Perhaps Hypatia could bring him to the Greek islands of old mythology. If I remembered correctly from the Odyssey, the Cyclopses had an island there. Maybe we could send this Cyclops back there so he could live with his kind.
Enough waiting around, Ethan said, unzipping his backpack. I'm bringing the food out now, so you all better be prepared.
He wrapped his hand around the dead snakes that had been Medusa's hair and pulled out her head. Not having much of a choice, I closed my eyes, bracing myself for the Cyclops' scream. Chapter 48. The scream was long and tortured, just like Kate's, and hearing it sent chills down to my bones. Then, mid-scream, it stopped. Someone shuffled their feet, but other than that, all was silent. Is it done? I asked. Can we open our eyes? Ethan didn't answer. Instead, I heard the sounds of a struggle and something clattering to the floor.
Fight me, and they all die,
Ethan said, his voice low. Ethan? I kept my eyes closed since I couldn't risk opening them in case Medusa's head was still out. What's going on?
I have the head of Medusa in one hand and a knife to your boyfriend's throat in the other,
Ethan said, calm and calculated.
Open your eyes and you'll be turned to stone. If Blake speaks, or if you try to do anything to save him, I'll slit his throat. Not like you can do much to save him, because you can't risk using your powers on me if you can't see anything, can you? And if you think Blake will use his power to save himself, don't worry. I made sure he couldn't when I knocked his lighter out of his hand. As a son of Zeus, I am stronger than him, so he doesn't have a chance of breaking free.
What are you doing? My heart pounded faster, and the darkness surrounded me, making me feel like I couldn't breathe. I was suffocating in it, drowning in it. I don't understand, I said. I thought you were helping us. Ethan laughed, dry and manically. He sounded like he was choking on his own laughter. It lasted for a few seconds before he got a hold of himself.
You are all so stupid,
he said, spitting out the last word. I haven't been on your side since you let Rachel die.
Do you know what it feels like to get your life back and think you're going home again? And then watching your twin die in front of you and being powerless to save her. Rachel should have been the one you saved first, not Blake. Rachel was a demigod, a daughter of Zeus. Blake is only a witch. Her life was worth 1,000 more than his ever could be. And you, a demigod yourself, should have known that. You should have saved your own kind first, but you didn't, and I will never forgive you for it.
That is so backward, Danielle said, which sent a surge of pride through my chest. Only a few months ago, she'd been casting spells on humans simply because she could. Nicole would have saved Rachel if she could. None of us wanted anyone to die.
She would have saved Rachel second, Ethan said. Not first. And Rachel deserved to be saved first.
I already explained this to you. I tried to speak calmly and rationally, despite the possibility that Ethan was too far gone to be appealed to through logic. But I had to try. I had to do anything to make sure he didn't slice that knife across Blake's throat. Blake had a stomach wound, and Rachel had a shoulder wound. In any normal circumstance, a stomach wound is far more deadly.
Shut up, Ethan yelled. Stop throwing that same bullshit at me. We all know why you went to Blake first. And it wasn't because you were analyzing both of their wounds. So stop trying to convince me otherwise, because it's not gonna work. What exactly do you plan on doing from here?
Chris asked.
You have a knife to Blake's throat. If any of us open our eyes, we'll turn to stone. We're all stuck. And I've a feeling that if you actually plan on killing Blake, you would have done it already. So what's the point of this, Ethan? What are you trying to do?
I'm going to bring the head of Medusa to the Titans as an offering from Helios,
Ethan said, sounding mighty proud of himself.
Helios? Danielle repeated. What does he have to do with this?
You didn't think you would hear his name again, did you?
Ethan laughed.
But like Hypatia warned us back in Greece, the gods don't forget their wrath. Helios definitely didn't forget about you killing his cow. When he saw how angry I was at you, rightfully so, after you let my sister die, he approached me with a deal. I help you get the head of Medusa, and then I take it into Kerberos in an offering to the Titans,
to prove Helios's loyalty to them. Then, when the Titans free themselves and rise again, I and anyone I care about will be protected under Helios himself. Helios even told me that he would bring my sister back from Hades. So don't you see? I had no choice but to work with him. Anything to get my sister back. I wanted to be a Medusa myself, which was why I put that great energy in your drinks. But hey, we can't always get what we want, can we? I have the head now. So that's good enough. I'll present it to the Titans, and they'll give their gratitude to me for stopping you all from killing Typhon. Because that's what happens when anyone gets turned to stone, you know. They die. It was so pathetic watching you all try to convince yourselves otherwise when it came to poor Kate. My heart dropped, but I forced myself to stay focused. I had to, for Blake's sake, because despite Ethan's threats, I didn't actually think he would take that head into Kerberos. He would have to be insane to step foot through that portal. You have the head, I told Ethan, reminding myself to stay calm. So why are you still here? Why haven't you taken it into Kerberos yet? I'm not scared, if that's what you think, he said. Helios promised me that the Titans are expecting me. They'll protect me until the portal opens completely. And you'll trust him? Danielle asked. Why? Why not? Ethan said. You all promised that you would keep my sister and me safe. But you lied. Zeus was just going to leave us on the land of the Lotus Eaters for the rest of our lives. So he clearly doesn't give a shit about us. Might as well take my chance with the other side. Especially since it's looking like they're the ones who will be in power for the next 1,000 or so years anyway. You're wrong, Chris said. We can stop them, and we will. Really? Ethan chuckled. With just 3 of you left. Good luck with that. 3? Danielle repeated. There are 4 of us. And there will be 5 of us, once we figure out how to get Kate back. You're even stupider than I thought, Ethan said. Sure, there are 4 of you now. I was thinking of killing you all, but I decided that being alive would be far worse torture for you than being dead. Chris, knowing that Kate gave her life for you out of love, after the way you were so oblivious to how much she cared for you, that's gotta hurt. Danielle, you're miserable as it is, so I have no interest in killing you. And Nicole, you're the best of all, because Medusa isn't the only one I'm taking with me into Kerberos. I'm taking Blake too, and I highly doubt the Titans will extend the same generosity toward him that they will to me. You can't do that, I said, the words catching in my throat. Take the head. I don't care. But Blake stays here. Just tell us what you want. Tell us what you want us to do for... I was interrupted by the sound of another struggle, and I held my breath, hoping that Blake was fighting free. But then Ethan laughed again. Footsteps echoed through the cave, and suddenly, all was silent. I opened my eyes in time to see their backs disappear into the swirling mud. And I didn't even have time to reach for my bow before they were through the portal to Kerberos. Nicole and the Elemental story continues in Book 4, The Portal to Kerberos. Elementals 4, The Portal to Kerberos. Chapter 1. I stared blankly at the spot where Ethan and Blake had been standing a few seconds earlier. I felt empty, as if all the air had been sucked out of my lungs. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think. Blake was gone. Ethan had turned on us and taken him into Kerberos. The prison world the Titans had been forced into 3,000 years ago after rebelling against the Olympians. Kerberos was supposedly so terrifying that just being there could drive someone insane in weeks or days. The portal to Kerberos had been sealed for thousands of years, until the Olympian comet appeared in the sky a few months ago. Now the portal was weakening, and less powerful monsters were slipping through, including the soul of the most dangerous monster himself, Typhon. It was supposed to be nearly impossible for Typhon to rise again, because after the second rebellion, Zeus split Typhon's soul from his body, locking his soul in Kerberos and trapping his body under Mount Etna in Sicily, Italy. But now that Typhon's soul had escaped from Kerberos, it wouldn't take long for him to reach his body. And on the spring equinox, about 6 days from now, his mind and body would join and become one. If that happened, he would surely rampage the earth, destroying all creatures in his path. Then, on the summer solstice, the portal to Kerberos would open, and all of the monsters locked within there, including the Titans, would escape and be free to rule again. Whether or not we stopped Typhon was a pivotal moment that would determine future events. We'd been told this by Nyx, the primordial deity of night itself who could travel between worlds and see all possible futures. If we stopped Typhon, we would have a chance to seal the portal to Kerberos, locking the Titans and all the other monsters inside. If we failed to stop him, we would be unable to close the portal, and war with the Titans would be inevitable. The world might never recover from the devastation that war would bring. The only way we could stop Typhon was by bringing the head of Medusa with us to Mount Etna, waiting for the moment he rejoined with his body, and forcing him to look into Medusa's eyes so he would turn to stone. Getting Medusa's head was difficult, and we'd lost one of our own, Kate, in the fight. She'd been turned to stone by Medusa. But we did get the head. Once we used it to destroy Typhon, we would close the portal. Then we would research to discover if there was a way to reverse Medusa's curse. Kate was one of us, and we wouldn't give up on her until we'd explored every possible way to save her. But now Ethan had turned on us, taking Medusa's head and Blake with him to Kerberos. He'd made some kind of deal with Helios that if he stole the head and brought it to the Titans in Kerberos, Helios would bring Ethan's twin sister Rachel back from the dead and would protect him and his family when the Titans rose again. Now, I stood there, staring at the muddy portal to Kerberos, waiting for Blake to emerge. He would be holding Medusa's head and smiling. He would tell us how he'd burned Ethan to a crisp. And then he would ask when the next flight to Italy was so we could go to Mount Etna and turn Typhon to stone. I reached for the knife in my boot and waited for what felt like an eternity, ready to fight in case Ethan came out as well. But the spot in front of the portal remained empty. Blake wasn't coming out, which gave me only one option. I had to go in there and get him myself. Chapter 2. I ran toward the portal, but the air itself pushed against me. I couldn't move. I ran harder, trying to use sheer determination to break through the wall, but it was hopeless. Chris! I dropped my arms to my sides and glared at him. Stop using your power. Let me go.
No,
he said, and the wind grew stronger, sounding like a storm as it rushed past my ears.
You know what Nyx and Darius told us. We can't go in there. It's not safe.
What if we go in there and can't get out?
Danielle added.
This is Blake we're talking about. I tried pushing against the wall of air again, but I was hopeless against Chris's power. I banged my fists against it and screamed. He's in there, and who knows what he's facing, I said. We can't leave him there alone.
I know, Danielle said. I agree with you.
Oh.